Welcome, everybody, to the after party for Naptown that happened a week and a day later.
Woo! Just realized I should have grabbed, like, wine for this.
Yeah. We should all have our 1920s-inspired cocktails is what we should
so
have.
So, you mean an Amaretto Sour?
My 1920s-inspired cocktail is peach tea, which maybe is okay. They had peaches and tea back then.
They did, yeah.
yes, indeed. No, Cody, peaches weren't invented until 1950.
Well, I don't know if they would have had peaches in what we could, where we could assume Naptown is set.
But, anyway.
You know, we're getting in the weeds we again. Are. I'm good at that.
So I think we want to start with grilling our lovely GM a little bit.
I don't want that.
because while we were going through Naptown, we had a lot of fun trying to guess, like, who of the NPCs, who is a rift of who. So basically, I would like to be indulged with who's a rift of who, and if you have a favorite NPC/rift combination, who that is.
Okay, rapid fire. Let's see. Lennox Willis and Victor Reed were Dr. Frankenstein and the monster.
Right, that was from Arc 1.
Arc 2 had Gideon, who was Ares. Lillian was Sleeping Beauty, and Martha was Maleficent.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I definitely did not guess that.
That's why her fire was green and why she was very protective of Lillian.
Okay.
Is some of it?
Yeah, I like it.
And there was a reason, like, oh yeah, like, everything was, like, rose flavor, like, it was called the Rose Martini, because it was, like, like, Briar Rose and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Arc 3, we had Evangeline, who was the Rift of a Maiden, which, I mean, is generic, but that's what her name is in the fairy tale, and Rumpelstiltskin was,
right.
Felix. I think those were the only rifts in that one, and then...
Dang, so all we had to do is say his name three times and we would have won.
That would have worked, but you didn't
Felix,
know that.
Felix, Felix,
Felix. Felix Ortman, Felix Ortman, Felix Ortman. We win!
Well, hopefully if he's playing it smart, he wouldn't have ever used his real name. You know?
That's true.
That's the trick.
It's entirely possible that was not his real name.
Whatever, the old man in Arc 4 was Odin, which I feel like was kind of obvious. And then everyone else was like Berserkers or Valkyrie. They were like non-specific.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Arc 4, or last arc, Lucia was the Rift of the Seven Ravens, or the Seven Brothers, depending on how you look at the fairy tale.
And what's the story with that one?
It's basically, like, these brothers are, like, accused of, like, hurting their sister. Like, not in, like, a terrible way, just, like, that they bumped her and their, like, father curses them and they turn into ravens.
Wow, okay. Is that a grim one?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the Mueller's were the Brothers Grimm, hence there being two of them. That's why there needed to be two of them.
Oh, that makes sense.
And that's why they were, creating rifts, is because they were, you know, like, they were making stories.
Okay. Oh, I really like that.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
Other random NPCs. Sylvia was the Rift of Radagast, who is a Norse or Slavic god, I can't remember which, of hospitality.
Makes sense.
No, Radagast is an angel/wizard in Lord of the Rings. Come on.
You know, like, he just stole names from everything.
I know. Yes, that's, I'm being facetious.
That's funny because I thought it was, and I just do Greek mythology all the time, so I thought it was Hestia.
Mm. I mean, similar idea.
Oh, yeah.
But I was trying to get diversity and not just have everything be Greek, because we had Gideon, who was kind of a big role.
This reminds me of a comic I saw talking about creating alcohol. I saw a webcomic recently, like a little like couple-panel comic, where it shows Jesus, okay, talking with Professor Xavier. And Professor Xavier says, well, turning water into wine is pretty useful at a party, but I don't see that's any good in a fight. And then Jesus looks down at the dead guard next to him and says, humans are 60% water.
Dark.
Right.
Let's see who else we have. Ewan was the Rift of Galahad.
Yes.
I looked that one up last week. Yeah, Galahad. Runa was just like... vaguely Tanner's conscience. She never was like, I eventually found like a Norse goddess who was like kind of like about like morality, but she really, she sprung from Cody's head, and she was never just like, I never like, this is exactly who she is, which I know everyone
she
really,
more evolved than right. was created.
Right. Yeah. So she just kind of like was given a thing after like she had it. And it's like, mm-hmm. I gave her vague powers of like being a lie detector, because that seemed like something your moral compass should be good at.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Was Runa originally a real person who had died and then became a ghost? Like, I'm just kind of curious, where did Runa come from?
So the story behind Runa, like, Runa's story is more interesting if you don't know the story, but it's basically she was a child, like, long ago who got turned into, like, a rift and then became an avatar. So basically she just didn't age for, like, 150 years and kept being people's consciences until Tanner showed up and then got, like, de-avatared by, whatever, what's this, Odin.
Yeah. Okay, so, like, that was the... Because I always assumed she was dead and was a ghost.
No. Idris is just a ghost. He's a rift of just a ghost. He was just a ghost. That's why you'd always just, like, kind of, like, spookily appear. Am I missing anyone? I think that's everyone.
I think that is everybody.
I like the idea of being a rift of a ghost. That makes me happy.
I'm glad. Thanks.
It just feels like double layers, I think.
Well, I tried to have some things just be like kind of generic, not like everyone had like this like grand right. arcing narrative.
Yeah.
And I liked the idea of the guy who's leading a secret organization being a ghost, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's appropriate.
And like, he wasn't meant to be the leader, and he just kind of evolved into that because we just like never got into like what the order was doing, because I wasn't interested in telling that story.
Right.
Is there a mythological or fairy tale figure that you would have loved to include as an NPC, but you didn't get a chance to?
I mean, any of them. I would have, like, I didn't do anything with Egyptian mythology, which I really love, but it's also kind of bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something else I thought of today that I'm like, oh, I would have loved to do just like a whole thing set in this, like just one set, you know? It might have just been Egypt. Egypt, like, I kind of miss, like, I love having Ra on things because, like, fire powers is, like, the thing that I always want. Mm-hmm. And when we did our last City of Mist, I was Anubis, so.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, like, if we ever did, like, City of Mist again, I think it'd be fun just to, like, have, like, it just be, like, one pantheon that everyone's from, and you're just, like, dealing mm-hmm. with only that pantheon yeah. exclusively.
So everything is on double levels of, like, what your...
Yeah, like, everything's...
How your rift... reacts with other rifts and like how your character reacts with other characters,
right? Because like this is like fun because we had some of that play, and like especially for your guys' arcs, I tried to give you guys, for those that were really into their rifts, I tried to give that double play back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like especially with Mandy had like Ares.
I had a good idea and where then, we wanted to go with that, so.
And then Ewan, I had like was meant to be your antithesis in a lot of ways. Because, like, you had a job where you, like, weren't necessarily always a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have a rift of a bad person. But ultimately, you were always doing, like, or you were trying to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, Ewan was the reverse of that. Like, he had a good job where he was doing the right thing. He had the rift of a good person. And then he was doing a bad thing with his off time.
Mm-hmm.
But I also didn't want him, like, it was just like you were both kind of in a moral gray area. And his was, like, more nebulous leaning.
Yeah.
And yours was, like, more positive leaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was just all of the contrasts within, internally and externally.
And favorite character, I don't know. I think my favorite person who was not, like, an NPC just for you guys to interact with, like, I mean, that's everyone, but I mean, like, wasn't created just for your character to interact with, like, Runa or Ewan. I think my favorite was Lennox Willis.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I liked having, like, an excitable, frightened dude.
Yeah.
Where, like, he was, like, frightened, and then he was just kind of like, no, that was just his personality. And
he's jumpy, yeah.
Like, he's always jumpy, or just, like, he cannot speak fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
He has just so many thoughts in his head, and he wants to tell you all of them constantly, which I had fun playing him. I know you guys got annoyed with him immediately and hated him.
I didn't hate him, it's just Tanner never trusted him.
I liked playing Ewan, and Runa's a darling and gem, you know? I think I liked playing Ewan a little bit better because he was just, like, more casual, where like playing a 10-year-old is like, I have to be in a certain headspace, and that's a little bit hard to always do on demand. It takes a lot of energy to be like, what's a ridiculous thing to say that a 10-year-old would say?
Yeah, yeah, there's a little more like thought and performance and creativity.
But the best line in the entire series for me was when you and Tanner are in the car and you're like, hey, do you see a 10-year-old in the backseat? And she goes, you didn't ask me if I could see a 10-year-old in the backseat.
This is a pretty good line.
That is the most creative I've ever been. That was like my one line for the series.
Right, you've peaked in life and now you've only...
Like, it was at that point where I'm like, oh, I've nailed Runa's character and we should just stop the series.
Right, yeah. Quit while we're ahead.
I do just enjoy Caitlin being casually brutal to you. It's really fun. I made one good joke. You've peaked in life. It's all downhill from here. All right.
Hey.
Dang.
No. No, I've made a lot of good jokes. Every time I add SP to a word, it's an amazing joke. Top tier there.
Look, there's going to be a whole section for that in my breakdown of Outlaws Wanted. Called Jokes That I Want to Kill.
Right. Top five worst spagic jokes. Yeah. But that is for a different episode.
Yeah.
I know it's for a different episode. I do want to call out Vinny for always like going I won't about it and then making a spagic joke in the one shot. I'm just saying. All right, what's my next question? Or maybe you guys could answer something.
Yeah, what do you got? Hit us.
What questions do you guys want to answer?
That's not how questions work, bud.
There's a whole list. There's a whole list. I don't know. Like, I'm saying I don't know as a lead in. I was instead of how, like we kind of know, like, what riffs, like, each of you guys were inspired by, but I'm curious, like, what inspired, like, your character arcs that you wanted to explore? You know, Caitlin, why did you pick a lawyer or Morgan Le Fay, you know, or anyone else?
I'm going to let other people speak first because I've been talking a lot.
I can jump on that.
Yeah,
first.
I feel like you were going to have the most immediate answer to that, Mandy.
Yeah, so, I knew when we decided to do City of Mist, I knew that I always stick with the Greek pantheon, and I really wanted to do Aphrodite because I originally was thinking about doing So my original thought for her was, you know, in Smash Bros, how Peach like fights with a frying pan and an umbrella.
Yeah,
that was like my original thought for the character. Is like, I want to do somebody who like it make like it's stupid girly and like none of it really makes sense, but it somehow works. But then when we were building characters, I couldn't figure out a way to make that work where it made me like that I was really happy with. So that's how Darling ended up more. Well, no, I think I made the joke about Dominatrix from one of the questions in the character builder or during character building. And that's how she kind of, I was like, oh, well, that's, I can like tool the character to work in that way. And then the reason that Gideon showed up is because Cody and I knew that we wanted to try to have our characters have a relationship in this campaign. And the Greek mythology background of Aphrodite and Ares, I find interesting. And playing off of that was how I kind of came up with, well, I don't remember if you came up with that character or if I just said like, hey, I think the Rift of Ares would be an interesting thing to work on. But then Zach and I, we streamed a lot together and we had time to like talk about it. And that's how Gideon showed up.
I will say Gideon was my least favorite NPC to play. Like, I don't like being demeaning towards people, and that's like kind of like his character towards Darling specifically.
Right.
Man, you could have been so much worse. I was prepared.
I mean, you were, but like, I don't know. It's just like not who I am as a person. So it's just I get that. He was my least favorite to play.
But I think it all turned out really good. I was very, very happy with my arc.
Yeah, I liked the drama. I liked coming back for the drama of Gideon and Darling and like what would happen.
Yeah, yeah. It was like a very although probably a little bit stereotypical, it was a very like dramatic arc, and that whole I really enjoyed my storyline. But anyway,
I also got to write you a poem for that one.
You did?
Oh yeah, that was so good.
It was very nice.
Yeah, when's someone else gonna run a game so I can romance Cody and get poetry?
I'd have to be a time when I'm playing a poetic character, which, well, Nyostroy literally will kind of be, but that's for our next game. I think for me, Tanner is like kind of based on Hellboy. And I kind of had this idea in D&D a while ago, and it's sort of like this pastiche that I like, but Hellboy as a character looks scary, seems evil, but is actually a genuinely good person that's generally well-liked. So he's kind and like gregarious to most people that he meets, so he has a ton of friends. So I like the idea of playing this like grumpy detective that seems frightening and is violent and dangerous, but also generally is a nice person who wants to be friends with everybody. Because I think like usually, you know, you're like grumpy old detectives like hate everybody and they're mean all the time. And it's like, that's really not what Tanner was supposed to be, a nice guy. It's just then things would go wrong and he like had a little bit of a hair trigger. So like it was an extreme thing.
Kind of like Lucy in some ways, where it's just like, he wants to be a nice person, but he's really good at killing.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, he's also not opposed to it. Like, he, you know, I think I told you this, Zach, when we were talking one time. It's like, he is not a pacifist. Like, he believes some people need to be hurt and is willing to. So, but generally, when he's dealing with people, that's not his goal. He wants to do the right thing. But
and he's always got a cup of coffee.
Yeah, but loosely he's based on Hellboy because, like, you know, Hellboy would walk into this thing where there's, like, monsters and demons, and he would totally fight them if he had to, but first he'd be like, hey, you just want to leave? Like, you can just go. Like, we don't have to fight. You can leave. I'll leave. We all go home happy. And then the other half of that is there's a frame in Hellboy that I always, like, stuck in my mind as, like, my favorite description of Hellboy as a character, which is, I spend a shocking amount of time falling supernaturally long distances, and it's like him falling through like a hole in the ground into like a pit.
I think after he's been stabbed. I know that scene, and it's a really good scene. Like,
yeah, because it's like this kind of like grumpy acceptance of, gosh, do I get hurt a lot? So I knew that I wanted it to be a character that had been hurt, and just like that was kind of, he was like prone to getting injured. That was going to be part of the rift, and so then I had to work back from there, and I found Tyr as a god that had been like lost a limb, which is like why like there's that connection between those two characters. And so then kind of the rest of the character was built from that. I knew I wanted him to be generally friendly, prone to getting hurt, and like willing to be violent. And Tyr fit that actually pretty well. The thing that I liked was the divination stuff that I actually ended up using a ton. Because
hypnotizing eyes.
Yeah, well, Tyr's like a really vaguely written like Norse god because he just isn't a super popular one. Like, really, the only thing about him is he doesn't like dogs because he got his hand bit off by Fenrir.
He also took care of Fenrir for a long time.
Right. But you know what I mean? It's like there just isn't a lot there. So yeah, it meant I could write a lot into the character because he's like, I think, the god of justice. So, you know, there's just like, opens it up pretty wide for what we do with them. But
yeah,
mostly it's just I think I'm always just trying to be Hellboy in everything that I'm in. I just want to be Hellboy. Is that an option?
Well, then why are you being the girl in your next one with your fire powers?
Huh?
I don't remember her name. It's the woman who can use fire in Hellboy.
Oh. Well, decidedly there's a pretty significant personality difference, but you know. But if you'll notice, Nyostroy also someone who seems frightening, but also generally kind to people.
you'll learn who Nyostroy is later.
Yeah.
I think I just wanted to branch out into a magic user, and I was trying to think of a cool female magic user.
Why'd you pick a lawyer? That's what I want to know.
Oh, for,
Oh, also, like, I don't know if I would say that your brother was a rift, but he was obviously Arthur for, like, reasons.
Yeah, so, like, the a lot of the rifts connections came out in my character's mundane life, like the
you wanted
some of the family dynamic things, and
yeah, and his wife was Gwen for Guinevere,
right? And so Morgana is, I believe, it ends up being against Arthur, but doesn't start that way.
Correct.
And so I was playing with, like, the tension of being paired with somebody or on the same side and being, like, constantly looked over. And Morgana's thing is, like, ambition and getting to power and, like, be, like, showcase what she can really do. And so that's kind of, I took a lot of Rift inspiration for her mundane life. And the, I think the lawyer thing was just, a job for a rich family that wasn't, like, altruistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Caitlin really dunking hard on the legal profession.
Sorry to all of our lawyer listeners.
Well, also, you specifically pitched.
I actually think we have one.
We might have an attorney. So sorry.
Well, you specifically picked like a law firm that wasn't just like being like defendants and like help. Like, it was like, you could buy your services, like,
right? It was, they weren't fighting for civil rights. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, the typical kind.
No, they weren't. They weren't like fighting for Caitlin, civil rights.
Keep
or
getting louder.
No, it's fine. Do you want to dunk on like doctors too? You know,
I mean, we kind of did with that with you and.
Yeah, I mean.
Well,
but oops. It did lead to like an interesting dynamic where, on one side, Faye is a lawyer and. Despite the type of clients that her firm might have taken, like, lawyers are expected to uphold the law, right? That's kind of like, whatever. You know what I'm trying to say. But then she has this second life where she's actively vigilante.
Right. And like a half of her life who that is by that puts morality to the side to some extent. Like, that's when she's arguing a case, like, that's not really in question. And in the other half of her life, it is really a question. So it was dealing with the tension between those two lives. It was about balancing lives, but I think that was pretty unsubtle.
I don't think I tried to make anything super subtle other than who the riffs were, so
yeah.
I will also say, I don't know if this was on recording that we talked about it last time, but Cameron's and Sons comes from your grandfather, or Faye's grandfather. Your dad wasn't just a dick who named it Cameron's and Sons.
No, we did talk about it because I brought it up. When you were like, I only have one brother, it's called Cameron and Sons. I'm like, wow.
I know we talked about it, I just couldn't remember if it was on recording or if Caitlin's going to cut it, but
yeah.
Like...
Yeah, it was.
It was, and like, we never got into your uncles or any of that, but I just like, there's only so much time, you know, and...
Yeah. So I don't think there was too much, and I just picked a cool magic user, and then kind of built it from there.
Yeah, and for Seamus, obviously, I don't know how much it really came out in the course of the game, but his rift was Finn McCool, Irish folk hero, like mythological hunter, and so it's pretty obvious when you have like Seamus had the dog tags of knowledge that's directly ported from the salmon,
right,
where in the myth Finn McCool was cooking a salmon for his master, and his master was going to eat this salmon to gain like the wisdom of the world or whatever. And he warns Finn, don't eat any of it, because that's for me, kind of thing. And while he's cooking it, he burns himself. He burns his thumb and like sucks his thumb to get it better. But it turns out that the oil that he got on his thumb from burning him, that's where all the knowledge ended up. So when he sucked his thumb, he gained all that knowledge instead. So that was kind of where that part of it came from. I tried to incorporate the like hunter warrior part of it into Seamus's backstory as being a former military man. Outside of that, I'm not really sure. I don't know what.
Yeah, I mean, like, City of Mist is designed to be like, you can lean into Rift stuff as much as you want, but you don't have to like go all in and like totally embody them. The right. You can kind of pick and choose like how much your other life reflects that.
Right. So. And when Seamus lost his that heirloom weapon and that he had in the what was that, the second to last arc, I replaced it with that shield that I used a handful of times, but I don't like that didn't really have any specific mythological connection to Finn McCool. It was just it was almost more from Seamus's mindset, where it's like, my friends are constantly getting hurt while we're doing these things. I need to be able to protect my friends. And so that's kind of where that.
Yeah. Came from. Yeah. Yeah. So it was more organic evolution.
Yeah.
Of the character, not directed by your rift.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It was like, cause he had this weapon and going guns a-blazing all the time wasn't working and people were getting hurt. So maybe try it. Maybe try more defensive style.
All right. What's your next question for me, Caitlin? Grill me more.
So I think this is another favorite that I always have, or that I always want to know, like after we do arcs and stuff, is where did we as a party go that you least expected us to? Like, where did we diverge from?
Arc one, that stupid chemical smell. I want to huff every chemical in this room. Well, that's bad. Because I got so in the weeds with that, I'm still upset.
You are still, I can verify this, you still bring it up sometimes and it frustrates you.
You guys just like would not let it go until, even after I like explicitly said, guys, you're going down the wrong track. And you're like, okay, so I walk into the room, what's it smell like? No, you're doing it wrong.
Well, I think at that point, it probably was, I don't remember, it's been so long. It may have been more facetious on our part.
Go check out our recordings, Vinny.
Yeah, right.
I think the biggest change like on the fly I had to do was like Tanner just like kicking out Herman. That was his name, Herman. Where he's just like, "Oh, Herman, you see me? You'll get out of my office."
Oh yeah.
Like that was really big because I wasn't trying to make Herman evil. I was trying to be like, "Hey, like, just help me do jobs because you need money." And like after a job, Tanner's like, "Screw you, get out." And I'm like, "Well, this is the whole like." The point of the arc was, like, the end of that was going to be, like, Cody having to make a decision between, like, doing, like, ends justify the means, and, like, should you do something that's, like, a little bit less effective, but, like, more, like, good-natured, or should you just be like, hey, we're going to take over the city and help more people, but we have to stomp down some other people? And Cody's just like, no, Herman's evil, get rid of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think I, like, feel bad about that one, because I, like, I'm generally not a person that really tries actively to tank someone else's story that much.
The thing that caught me off guard is you're just like, hey, like, up until your arc, you're just like, I want to play around with Tanner being poor and having to do stuff with that. And I'm like, cool, here's the perfect excuse. This guy is paying your bills. You're about to get evicted. This guy is having you do stuff that isn't even morally that nebulous compared to what you do. It's just like saying, instead of giving the artifact to the Order, give it to him. And job two, you're like, screw you, you seem evil. And I'm like, well, I don't know how we play with you being poor then.
Yeah.
Well, I guess in the moment, I saw that as a moment where Tanner is like, I will voluntarily stay poor if it means maintaining my morals.
Yeah, I think that was maybe like a miss on our part that, like, you know, we couldn't know until it was in the moment. And not that I think we should have re-recorded it, because I actually like where that arc ended up. I'm really surprised you didn't say Tanner trying to become what's it called?
A
crime lord,
a bootlegger. Yeah, like I thought that would have been the thing that was more off base.
Well, do you want to know my honest opinions? Like, you texted me that, and I turned to Caitlin. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck anymore.
Like, well, it's like I kind of knew
that arc was so in the drain, and everything I threw to you the whole time, like. It's that meme of, like, someone putting that, like, putting the plate in front of someone and you grabbing it and just chucking it. And that was that entire arc. It was, like, four or five times. Like, the other thing in that arc that was, like, where I wasn't expecting, I'm like, oh, like, Tanner has these contacts at the police and like he like was on the outs with them because they weren't doing enough. And then I was having them extend an olive branch to bring him back in and like do more at the police. And Tanner's just like, nope.
Well, so this is where I think it's like I'm not gonna like accept full blame for it, because I do think it was mostly miscommunication. Because like in my mind, like as the player in like those two moments, right? What's his name? Not Odin. Herman, like just such like in to me as a player, so immediately gave like I am the devil vibes. Like he might as well have been twisting a mustache and like drinking red wine and like monologuing and like foaming at the mouth, because he was just like, this guy has bad news written all over him. You know what I mean?
Cody went from being a pretty good player through like up until his arc, and then he just like wanted to burn everything to the ground.
I didn't mean to. You know, that's what I mean. It's like I didn't mean to. And it was like, I think part of that was just like it was me misunderstanding the situation, but I also think it was the way Herman was presented. I think just kind of like he was giving off bad vibes, you know what I mean? And then the thing with the police, I think that was just an issue of like language. And we talked about this later, because like basically the instance you're talking about is someone came up to Tanner and said like, oh, you're under arrest. And we were like in the middle of a job, and Tanner was like, well, not right now. I'm not like there's about to be a fight, and I'm kind of the heavy hitter of the group, you know, like,
right. Well, and that's like the hardest part with these games is like figuring out like the balance of consequences or like for your actions. It's like, well, what is meant as a joke and what like should actually have repercussions, you know? It's like,
yeah.
And it's like sometimes it's like hard to know like where the bit ends and the seriousness begins.
Well, and I think in my mind, like, and again, this was just a misunderstanding, like for me that was not a bit, that wasn't a joke, like
that wasn't a bit, but like the reason they came for you was because like you're like, hey, I had to murder some people in an alleyway and stuck it in someone's mailbox.
Well,
after kind you of, robbed
but
them,
yes. Like,
well, you said on the thing like you murdered people on the note, and I'm like, well, like these people were gonna have you arrested for robbery, but then you like confess to murder,
right? Like there's like levels of stuff, you know what I mean? I think it was just like a misunderstanding of what I was supposed to do, because at that point I legitimately had no idea what to do with the fact that like I just like basically gotten caught committing a crime, and it's like, I guess try to give it back and see what happens. Like whatever.
Right, well, with that scene in particular, like, well, basically what was going to happen is you're going to get arrested, the group would have was going to find out what you guys found out anyway. And then you'd have time to like talk with Faye about things and reestablish connections. And then I brought Faye back in, and you're like, so that didn't happen. So I brought Faye back in during your like car chase, and she saw what happened and was going to approach you. And you're like, I don't want to talk to Faye. I don't, not Faye Day.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I think this again was just like, it was like a misstep on my understanding of what was going to happen, because like, you know, again, like in my mind, it was like, so I did one job for this guy. It was illegal and I got caught. And then he was sinister, and I was like, okay, I'm done with you, right? And then it's like, we're in the middle of a job where I thought there was going to be a fight. A guy comes up and says, we're arresting you. Like, not right now, you're not. Maybe later, but not now, you know? And then,
don't
like...
Don't have time for this, yeah.
I was at that point like, okay, so like Tanner's on the run from the police, and you're like, well, but you need to talk today. And I'm like, I didn't know I was supposed to talk today. I didn't get that. I didn't know. But it was just like, I think it was just like a misstep, but the kind of end result of that was I actually kind of liked what happened for Tanner better, so I'm happy with it, you know?
Well, I'm glad, like, but like, yeah, like, but by the time you're like, can I have the gang, and I'm like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, it's just hard, as a GM to predict a reaction always.
Yeah, yeah.
Because right. You're not in the player's headset of like the information that they're getting, and
right, it's also
how that's going to hit them, and so you just have to roll with that reaction, even if it's like way different than how you were thinking.
Well, it's also like difficult because I'd lost my train of thought. Oh, it's just gone. It's just really gone. Oh no, it's like difficult because it's like also like I don't know how much I should tell you beforehand. Be like, hey, right. This is a plot, because I'm like, part of it's like I want like Tanner to have a real reaction and not just like a scripting out everything.
I'm right,
like,
you don't want to script a reaction, so it's just right, hard in the moment to not panic because of what you have on a piece of paper.
I will say, like, the last arc, I think, did really well because we were doing our chunks because, like, a baby's not sleeping well yet. And I'm like, oh, like, I didn't need to plan a ton because, like, I can figure it out in the moment in an hour. And then it's like, if anything takes, like, a hard left, like it did several times in the last arc, and I'm like, well, we're done in 5 minutes, and then I can figure out where we're going.
Oh, what took a left in the last arc?
Like, how you guys were, like, searching for stuff, like, was, like, a little bit, like, going to the warehouse and stuff.
Oh, gotcha.
Like, I didn't really have, like, a huge plan, but I didn't know what you guys were doing, and they were, like, how your plans were going through. And I think the reason all your plans worked and felt good in the moment for you guys is you guys did your plan, and then you're like, okay, what are we doing next week, and would tell me, and I'm like, okay, so I know what happens either way.
Right, yeah, gives you a second to, like...
Which, we only record 2 hours at a time, so it's not, like, terrible, but if you guys diverge, you know, in minute 5 of an episode, I now have to scramble for 2 hours instead of 1 hour.
Yeah, I know how that feels.
Right, yeah, and I would say that's maybe something that's different about our group than other groups that play RPGs, is that we do shorter, we honestly record in shorter chunks. Like, we're not the type of podcast that's recording for 4 hours and then we break it up into 4 separate chunks.
Honestly, I think we're more abnormal because from what I understand, most people either record, or a lot of people just record 1 hour a week, or like their episode a week and are done. There's two camps and we're like halfway between them.
Yeah. Yeah, because we were doing 2 episodes a week so we could have a backlog, which then means mm-hmm. that, yeah, you kind of have to get 2 hours ready for a week. And then, yeah, that can sometimes be scary. I remember how that feels. Yeah. It's like, oh boy. Mm-hmm. If stuff diverges, yeah, at minute one, it's like, long time we got. we winged it.
But my thoughts were, after doing each arc, the one I felt worst about afterwards was definitely Cody's arc or Tanner's arc.
That just because there was so much that you weren't expecting. And you felt like you were always on your back.
Well, I felt like at a certain point, like with the miscommunication me and Cody were having, I felt like Cody wasn't enjoying it, which since then he's told me he really liked how everything went. But like after finishing it, I'm like, well, Cody hated that. And I feel like terrible.
I was definitely confused in the middle. Like, I think I hit a middle point where I'm like, I feel like I've messed up and I don't precisely know what I did. Because it felt like, I think the crux of the issue for me was, it was like, well, I'm going to get arrested either way. And there's not really a point where Tanner would go to jail. But then again, I just didn't realize, like, arrested was, you're just going to have a conversation with Day. I had, like, no idea that's where it was going.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, got it.
I don't remember if the scene actually happened because it's been so long since we did that one. But, like, basically, I think it happened later on where it's, like, Day was going to do you a favor and, like, be, hey, like, we know you're, like, a little eccentric. Don't do this again. Also, I need your help. And she was going to be, like, a main character of that arc. And that's why you don't have any, like, other NPCs other than Runa in that arc, really, is because, like, it was meant to be Day. She was going to be, like, bumming around with Tanner the whole time. And, like, learning about Rift stuff. And then, like, at the end, she was going to start a Rift task force. Like, mm-hmm. with Tanner in it. Who was going to kind of, like, lead it. And then, like, the stuff where Seamus, like, had to deal with, like, the arrest and stuff wouldn't have happened in the same way. Because it wouldn't have, like... The reason all that kerfuffle happened more so is for Seamus to have moral dilemmas in his arc.
Right, and that opened up... Like, the way that things went in Tanner's arc opened up opportunities for Seamus to have... like those scenes with Day and all of the stuff in the last arc. So that was a good
thing to come up. I think it ended up working out very well. It's just like when we finished the last episode and that, I'm like, well, I failed Cody and I don't feel good about this.
I let down my friend and now I feel bad.
I think my favorite arc was probably the casino.
You had a lot of fun just like coming up with the riffs for that and like the whole scenario. And we had all the fun dice roll stuff for the casino.
I liked the dice rolls. I found the characters more interesting. I thought the like setup was fun and it was like kind of heisty, so you guys got to plan out more. Like I had
I love a good heist.
I had a toy box that you guys could play with, so like you guys didn't really go off the rails at any point with like it, and I thought I had like cool stuff going on.
Because we had having the casino boat made it like a lot more of a, not a locked room, but we were focused on like one set piece. We weren't gallivanting all over the city.
Yeah, I like
one thing.
I like the
one thing I
I like the twist of Ewan, like, you guys, you figure out Ewan's a riff because he was in.
Oh, I love that scene so much. All of us were just like jaws on the floor.
Oh, my favorite. Yeah. My favorite was after we stopped recording, because I think we cut it after. After we started recording, everyone, all four of you, like, individually, it's like, you know, she had her illusions up, right? And I'm like, I know. And they're like, but she had her illusion up. And I'm like, I know. That's his rift. He can see the truth of things.
Mm-hmm.
Truths that are hidden, if you will.
Yeah, that was a great reveal.
One thing I really liked about that arc was, like, while we did successfully take down Felix Ortman and got the boat, the casino, under new management, we technically failed our job.
Right.
We did not successfully retrieve the coin machine. It ended up in the hands of the Muellers, which I thought was an interesting thing, where it's like, we kind of succeeded, but also kind of failed and had to deal with the
consequences. That's what we call a mixed success.
Right. Anyway, what was your guys' favorite arcs? Tell me how good I am. Also, your favorite NPCs. Tell me, like, give me a kiss on the lips, you know?
I think my favorite arc was Darlings, for sure.
I really liked mine, too.
That one was fun to watch.
See, I think Darlings was the best executed overall, but I didn't like playing Gideon, which just, like, makes it not my favorite.
Yeah, and it, like, I think Gideon was a good NPC, though. Like, you know, it's...
Oh, yeah,
you know,
like,
playing, like, the Joffrey of a game, it's like, yeah, that character is despicable, but is a fun character. I enjoyed that
I don't
stuff.
Think he's bad, and if people enjoy him, like, I don't think it's, like, there's anything wrong with that. It's just, like, as a person, I don't like playing a character who says, like, well, you're dumb as shit, you know, darling. You know, it's, like, not what I enjoy.
That's the type of thing where I write it out. Like, if I know that it's gonna be difficult to say how I want to say it, I write it out so that it lands.
I do the same thing.
But I don't know if people consider that cheating, but that's what I do.
Yeah, it's like with me, I just recently finished Mass Effect 1. For the first time, I'd never played those games before, and I could not do anything but play a Paragon character, because I just can't, like, I find it so hard to be a jerk all the time.
Right, like, you're like not going to kick puppies in a video game.
Right.
What was your favorite arc, Caitlin?
I liked watching Mandy's, for sure. The casino one was fun, because that was more favorite.
You have to pick one. Which one's your favorite?
Okay, fine. Then I'll say my arc. Okay. And be selfish.
That's fine.
Make others focus on me, not each other.
Wait.
Yeah, like the casino. I like heist. I'm a sucker for heist stuff and planning, that sort of thing. I liked the mystery of, like, trying to figure out the pictures on the wall. Like, what was going on with that was really interesting.
Oh, that was a good reveal, too, when Mandy's just like, hey, why do you have a picture of a warehouse on your wall? And it's like, oh.
yeah, because Darling gets stuck there and has to, like, fight her way out. And I think that one was, I think Faye and Darling were partnered up in that one in a way that we hadn't been before, and that was super fun. And then, obviously, like, the big reveal with Ewan, like, being a rift, because I didn't know any of that before. He was just a dude.
That she thought was cute. Yeah, because you made up Ewan, like, the mundane parts of him. And
yes.
You're like, oh, like, it's gonna be this heartbreaking thing where it's, like, gonna be this guy who I really like, but he'll never, like, truly know me, which is the problem I have with my family, but I'll actually like him, like, and, like, want to give him a chance. And I'm like, well, no, he'll see you for you as you truly are.
Right, yeah. Well, because that was the other scene I really liked, was the party scene where she meets Ewan and then is, like, trying to maintain, like, a nice date that she's actually enjoying versus, like, her friends are doing a job. She needs to be paying attention on the job. So that was a lot of fun, too. But yeah, I think the casino one is my favorite for all of those reasons, and the big reveal with Ewan.
I liked the mystery of it. I liked how it wasn't just, like, you find a dead guy on the street or, like, you find...
Yeah, it was a little bit more puzzly.
Yeah, like, it was just, like, a weird premise I came up with, like, this unlucky coin that just, like, keeps killing people in, like, bizarre ways, where it's, like, the chances of dying like this are one in a million, you know? It's, like, a car ran over a penny, and it, like, pinged off, like, two light posts and hit you right in the forehead.
Yeah, yeah.
And caused you to have a heart attack. It's, like, that doesn't happen.
Right, yeah. So that was
Well, I was gonna say real quick, just to elaborate on mine, my favorite arc was definitely mine because I really that was probably the most character development Darling ended up having, because that's where the focus was. So I had a lot of fun with that. But you're gonna hate this answer. My favorite NPC was probably Felix Ortman. Because I love a good antagonist, and that was like...
I think he was the best villain.
Less than Gideon, because we talked a lot about, like, kind of how that relationship was going to work, like, because we had to figure that out. But, like, I got to go toe-to-toe with Felix a lot, and that was really fun for me.
Well, that's the thing, is I don't think of Gideon as a villain. He's an antagonist. Like, Gideon was just a dick. Like, he was not a bad person, as in, like, he's working against the city or trying to promote something terrible. He worked for the Order. He did his job well. He was just a dick to Darling.
He was bad in relationships.
Right, especially with Darling.
Yeah.
So, like, I didn't ever consider him, like, a villain. He was just kind of, like, a bad person. Where Felix Ortman, I think I nailed, like, slimy villain.
Yeah. No, he was a lot of fun to... Like I said, go toe to toe with. I really enjoyed those scenes.
So, remind me again, which one was Darling's arc? What was the mission on that one?
That was the Rose Martinis with Lillian and Martha.
Yeah, because that's what I thought it was. I just wanted to make sure I was remembering correctly. That one is also my favorite arc because it got a lot of great character development for Darling, and then by extension Tanner. But then also had some great character development for Faye as well with bringing in Ewan. I just thought that was very, very good that everyone was incorporated in. And even though the focus was on Darling, it wasn't just Darling, you know?
I think we ended up having a lot more scenes in that arc because it was our second one.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, the first one's always going to be super like focused on the plot and us like kind of slowly dipping our toes in the relationships and who these characters are. But like starting with, like, I feel like the second one, you know, I don't want to say you have to nail it, but like, I think we nailed it with the second arc in Naptown because it did feel like the focus was on Darling, but everybody got their scenes in, because we made those scenes happen.
Yeah, well, I think the other thing is, like, I think the same thing happened in the casino arc, but I think it felt less different because, like, all the scenes were happening at one location, where in Darling's arc, there was, like, three or four locations that you went to, and then you had some downtime, and then the party.
And I think we did a lot more, like, going one-on-one with each other, talking about what was happening. Like, I think Faye and Seamus... were like, did we, I want to say we had like a conversation about Gideon.
Yes.
Yeah, you guys did.
Because we had found out something about him. I don't remember what it was, but I remember like.
I think it was after you found out he was a Rift, right?
Yeah, because you thought when he first came back, you went to the VA or the, not the VA.
Yes.
Yeah. The what's it called? I can't remember the name of it, but you guys went to the military like. Mm-hmm. Retreat,
the VFW
community center, yeah. Whatever. But yeah, y'all ended up having like a whole like scene and stuff there, and going to your parents' house afterwards.
Yes,
there were
a
lot of scenes. Yeah. There were a lot of scenes with me and Tanner, obviously, but then there were scenes with Darling and Faye because we were talking about Gideon,
right? Yeah.
And then the way that I think we had to split up the party like several times because then Darling and Seamus got solid scenes together. So we were like, it felt really good with how all of, like I said, I think it was the scenes. I think we got a lot of those in the second.
Well, I think it was the most unintegrated that like your personal life was out of any of the arcs. Because, like, the Gideon stuff, like, really didn't have anything to do with the crime at all. Where yeah. the...
Oh, but we thought it was. That was the other thing, too, is that we... Or, like, Faye thought it was, like, really connected. And so, like, having two possible explanations for something and have that be sort of a mystery for at least half the arc was fun, yeah. too.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Caitlin, who's your favorite NPC? Or Seamus, Vinny, who's your favorite NPC?
So you guys are going to think it's silly, but I have to say Lucia. Like, not just because she and Seamus ended up together. I always enjoyed, like, she was the constant thorn in our side, and we were the constant thorn in hers. And anytime we'd run into her, it was always a battle of wits kind of thing. Like, it was always, yeah. It was yeah. always a witty conversation, and she always had some retort. I don't know. I enjoyed interacting with her.
I feel like I nailed Lucia, too. Like, there's a certain characters I feel like I did really well, like, all the way through.
And she was a good through line because, like, the Mutlers were really in the shadows the whole time. And, like, Lucia was the front man. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah. like, she was the consistent antagonist that we saw.
She was, like, their executor. She was their XO, I guess, is what if you want to call it that.
Right. And so, like, with the casino thing, like, seeing her there, like, having those, like, little reminders, like, when we failed that, like, she was around was fun.
Yeah, I liked Lucia. I liked having, like, a villain who just, like, was unflappable, too. But it's because, like, I think Felix Ortman was a much more, like, realistic or normal villain, where it's, like, you guys, like, made him upset and stuff, where it's, like, everything you did with Lucia, where she was just, like, you are beneath my notice.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting, because, like, Lucia was, like, the constant... She was always there. She was, like, not in the middle of it, but she was always involved somehow. Yeah, did we ever actually fight her directly?
No, we just kept avoiding it because we were supposed to fight her, I think, in episode one, right? And then we just kind of like sidestepped it.
Yeah, you were she was there. You were supposed to fight her the first thing, and you guys were like, we don't want to fight. And she's like, okay, like, I won't, you know, like, I figured you guys were going to go guns a blazing when like a villain.
Yeah, stay out of my way and I'll stay out of yours kind of thing.
Right. And you guys kind of like talked to like a stance of like, well, we're going to kind of maybe stay out of your way. And then you didn't, but. Tanner, Cody, favorite character.
Oh, Gideon.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, no, I like a good person to hate, you know, like that's a fun one.
Caitlin, what's your favorite character?
I like Ewan and Runa. Ewan for obvious reasons, just because I had a lot of scenes with him and got to do more, like, emotional exploration with Faye because of him. And then Runa, just, like, because she was adorable and funny.
I was thinking about some other lines that I had with her. I'm like, no, I didn't just peek with the 10-year-old line, but look into my eyes. Here's a cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah. Like, I would.
I was going to mention that earlier. I think that's my favorite. That's my favorite.
Yeah. The look into my eyes. Here's a cup of coffee should be like on merch, should be on t-shirts, should be.
I should put that on a mug. Like I should get a travel mug that just says, look into my eyes. Here's just a cup of coffee.
So that's what we need to do. We need to get a portrait of Runa commissioned with that in a speech
box. Yeah, and I, as like a tidbit of, I don't know, like backstory with the hard-boiled egg thing. Did we talk about this on air?
I don't think so. We did.
That her requesting a hard-boiled egg at the restaurant is because, like, I, as a child, went to, like, a pancake house or something with my family one time, and I didn't like any kind of eggs besides hard-boiled. And so when they were ordering breakfast and they said, you can order an egg any style, I was like, yeah, I would like a hard-boiled egg, please. And they're like, we don't do that.
And then Caitlin was indignant about it. They said any kind. And
I was like, they said any style. So that was just like a funny story from my childhood that Zach like worked in, like just kind of off the cuff while he's having a diner scene.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, me either. I don't think I knew that.
Oh, okay.
Well, the thing is, like, I felt like it wasn't me just trying to work it in. I'm like, oh, this is like the perfect thing for like a 10-year-old to say, like a child. I don't know if she's actually 10, if she's acting how a 10-year-old. She acts like a child, you know.
Right, for like this precocious companion to say.
Right, so. Where it's like, I want to eat something. It's like, what do you want? I was like, I want like something weird that a diner would be like, well, we kind of have that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I want a pancake, but instead of flour, can you make sure it's wheat flour? And it's like, What?
Yeah, just like ask for scrambled eggs or dip eggs. There aren't any other kind of eggs.
Yeah, it's like basically like you can have any color car as long as it's black.
Yeah.
And Caitlin, just for the record, I'm on your side. They said any style.
Thank you. 10-year-old Caitlin appreciates it.
Also, I feel like diners should have hard-boiled eggs. I'm going to go.
They have a Cobb salad, right?
Yeah, it's like, but also you have eggs and water, so boil an egg. Like, what?
I know. Take it up with the Pancake House, people.
Is it that hard?
Is there any riffs that you guys wanted to see that just, like, didn't incorporate?
Ooh.
With listening to Hadestown, like, I really want to make a riff off of Hades now.
Mm. I don't remember his name, but Finn...
The giant...
Yeah, Finn McCool has, like, a giant nemesis. It's Scott... Like, it's a Scott... It's like a... It's supposed to be from Scotland, right? And it's like a... They had... He had a nemesis, and, like, the story behind...
Is it, like, Giant's Causeway? Yeah.
Yeah, Giant's Causeway was related to that, where it's, like... It was a bridge that was built between them and it got broken, which is why there you have the stones in both locations and whatever. That, like, I don't know how you would have incorporated that or how that would have came in. And I not that, like, I was expecting this and how dare you not do it. It's just, like, looking back, I was like, that would have been a fun interaction.
See, I was going to have him be in your arc at some point because originally there was going to be one more arc that was your arc and then move everything that happened in the last arc to the end. But I'm like... At a certain point, it just feels like stalling, and I feel the meaningful interactions you would have had with a villain you were having with Lucia anyway.
Right.
So I'm like, I could just, like, extend this, have you have meaningful interactions, and then, like, lessen the Lucia stuff, but I thought that was better.
Yeah, no, I think I agree.
But that did mean, like, some of, like, you were the person who got, like, less of your mythology in it. I also know the least amount of Celtic out of all of them.
Yeah, I mean, so did I. The only reason I even knew about Finn McCool is because I went to Ireland a few years ago and learned about him there. And when we were coming up with characters, I'm like, let's do something with that.
Yeah.
I know some of it, because I also know of, like, Cú Chulainn, who was, like, a weird berserker who looked hideous.
So,
like, he, like, hulked out, but in a very ugly way.
How long have we been playing this arc, or this campaign?
We started...
3 years?
Yeah, about 3 years.
Okay, that makes sense because I went to Ireland in summer 2017, and so it,
oh,
like,
wow.
Granted, it was a little bit. Obviously, this came in a little bit later than that. Like, we started this later, but it was a lot closer to when I went to Ireland than now.
This campaign is as old as our children.
That's the only reason I know how long it's been.
How long is this, like, on the dot? Because this one I think is a little bit younger. Well, it is because
Outlaws was started. I want to say the boys were about 4 months because that's when we could start recording again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the first thing we recorded after they were born. Was the Outlaws one?
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything we want to?
Is there any riffs you wanted, Caitlin? You just said, "Oh, good question." Then.
Oh, I didn't think of anything.
I have one.
In particular.
I wanted a riff of an insurance agent, but you know.
Of course you did.
Someday.
I saw there's one question in there I wanted to answer, which was, is there any part of your character, like any part of your character development or character arc that you wish had happened or that you didn't quite get to, or anything you would change about how your character progressed? That was something I had an answer
for.
Okay,
go for it.
So I'll ask it as well. For me, I wish I had started the courtship, whatever you want to call it, with Lucia sooner. The way it came in, and this is also a product of Seamus not having his own arc, which I understand why we didn't do that. But it ended up feeling rushed.
Like, right.
All of a sudden, oh, Seamus and Lucia are a thing now. It kind of felt almost shoehorned, but there's no other way to do it if this is the last arc.
Well, it was like in the time skip, you know what I mean? Because there's like a time skip and it's like implication of what happened during that time, you know?
And your arc was last. Like if you had had if you had had the first arc and had gotten together with Lucia, then there would have been time. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but because we didn't have that dedicated arc for Seamus, then it kind of, well, we have to, if we're going to have this thing happen, then we have to have it happen somewhere, so it has to happen at the very beginning of the next arc. So it just kind of felt,
mm-hmm.
it felt very sudden, kind of. But I'm glad. I'm glad it happened. I thought that was an interesting thing for Seamus. But I just wish it had been a longer developing thing.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
I mean, Tanner ended up someplace drastically different than I thought Tanner was going to end up, but I actually kind of like it, so I'm okay.
Like, where did you think Tanner would end up?
Well, that's tricky. So, like the rift that I took after getting rid of one of my... So, like, Tanner stopped being a detective and started doing something else, right? So I always knew the idea with Tanner was he's going to stop being a detective because that part of his life was essentially over, right? Like, there, it was like, it wasn't actually a good fit for him, and what he was doing now wasn't good, like the private detective thing. So then what I went with was, like, a monster slayer, right? And my thought there was that he would kind of, like, be more proactive about, like, taking on rifts that were dangerous, right? So it wouldn't just be, oh, this rift is causing enough trouble now that we're getting noticed, but that would be, like, his career. But there isn't really a career that is that. And I did like the, like, way that, like, money could be a dangerous thing. So becoming a criminal was not what I thought, but I actually kind of preferred in the world that Tanner lived in, because it's, like, there isn't, in Tanner's mind, there wasn't a better option than that. And for him, the beast that he wanted to slay was the Mueller's. So it's like, yeah, I'm just going to start stepping on toes. Like, it worked for Tanner because, like, the progression of his character was getting to the point where he was done, like,
messing around. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it gives him agency in a way that other avenues didn't.
Right. That's what I think I like. That's actually exactly the right way to put what I liked best about it, was it felt like Tanner, like, being proactive and taking control of a situation that he had been only reacting to up to that point.
Which I did feel bad. You're like, I want to control a gang. And I'm like, cool. And then they'll start the next arc. So your gang's dead. Which is why I talked a lot about you with it. But my problem was, I'm like, I don't know how to make this, like, these people a threat when you have a gang that can do anything in the city.
I think it ended up being fine. I think that you imagined the, like, the thing that, like, I think I was confused about when we talked about that was, like, you're like, you have a gang this size and now it's smaller. And I'm like, I kind of imagined it being that smaller size that you said to begin with. But okay. Yeah. I'm fine with it. You're like, okay, you have a gang. It's 12 people. Or you have a gang. And I'm like, okay, so I got like 12 people. And then you're like, you have 60, but I'm killing all but 12 of them. Like, all right. Fine. Deal. I accept.
I think for me, the only thing that I didn't get to explore with Darling, and this is 100% on me, is I ended up, I think we all did, end up taking 3 mythos to the 1 logos. And I originally,
I had 2 and 2.
You had 2 and 2.
Oh, the whole time?
I think so, yeah.
I was pretty sure Tanner had 3 and I had 3.
Yeah.
And did Seamus end up with 3?
Yeah, Seamus ended up with 3 mythos, 1 logos.
The problem with Faye is Caitlin, like, the way Caitlin played Faye to begin with was, like, leaning more toward being more mundane, and she's like, well, I don't want that. So then she decided to start burning through her brother's goodwill at the last arc. Well, at this point, it's a moot point to give you new powers.
Yeah. But no, at the end of my arc, I ended up with 3 mythos and the 1 logos. And I kind of had implied in, like, a short scene with Gideon that, like, there was, like, more riftness happening. And then I never really figured out a way to elaborate on that. And I kind of would have liked to explore, like, the rift coming through more, but that there was so much other stuff going on and it wasn't my arc anymore. So didn't happen.
Yeah. In a perfect world, I would have had another whole, like, season of this, but I got tired of running City of Mist, for being honest.
I completely understand that. It is a fun game, but we're looking into other stuff.
No, I like it. And it's just like, at a certain point, it's like New Horizons. And I don't want to just play in the same sandbox forever. Because, like, the thing is, like, as a player, I like being in the same sandbox forever because I get to explore more. But as a DM, like, the longer I'm in a sandbox, the less mystery there is because I just plot everything out. And then I also have to look at my mistakes all the time. I'm like, that's a big plot hole. I don't like it. And it's like, right, ignore that.
Well, one thing I do want to say about that last arc is even though we did, like, cut out a potential arc that was going to be there for Seamus, I thought you did really well with incorporating Seamus into that last arc. And
oh, yeah, like, I mean, like,
it wasn't specifically his arc, but he had a lot of hard choices, and I really, like, it was painful, it was frustrating, but it was good.
I mean, in my mind, it was Seamus's arc, it just also happened to be the last arc. Well, and because, like, the thing is, like, I think the last episode was not Seamus, like, in the same way that everyone else's last episode of the arc was. But you had, like, all these difficult choices to make, and no one else had any difficult choices, really.
Right. Yeah, and, like...
Like,
so,
like, name a difficult choice any of the other three made the entire time.
Whether to accept Seamus back. it was such a difficult scene, but I really enjoyed the scene where Seamus had to raid the... He had to raid the Mystical Grove. Like, that was such a good scene.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so proud of that one.
There was so much good tension at the beginning of that arc with, like, the warehouse and, like, Darling and Tanner dealing with that and Faye having this knowledge and then being too late and Seamus going somewhere and being surprised. There was just, like, so much mystery and reveal in that first thing for the characters that was a lot of fun.
You know, for the first campaign I've ever ended... And, like, not just, like, stop playing, that I've ended. I feel really good about a lot of scenes. Mm. Like, I feel like I kicked you guys in the teeth in the right ways. I think the thing you described where it's like, oh, like, Faye flies in and sees the building explode into flame. And it's like, okay, let's rewind 15 minutes. And Seamus, you're going to raid somewhere. So everyone's just like, oh, you're going to go raid your best friend's hideout. And then you, like, show up at the Mystic Grove and you're like...
Yeah, that one caught us all off guard.
What? Everyone's like, wait, and what?
Like, we joked, about how, like, that last arc, I was rolling. My dice were just not cooperating with me.
Just terrible.
I rolled so many bad rolls. But honestly, I think that made a better story because it just, like, this was a stressful, difficult arc for Seamus.
Yeah.
And then it just turned out that the dice rolls were making it even more stressful and difficult.
It was stressful to watch because it's like all these moments where you could see it going a different way. And then it's like, nope. Like, oh, man. Like, Vinny was really doing it, you know?
Like, yeah, it was frustrating in the moment where it's like I came up with this awesome plan to do something and it didn't work out. But I think... overall it made a better dramatic story.
Yeah
Well, because it's like the kind of the trick with RPGs, and it's like a good thing and a bad thing, is that, like, you know, like the image that I had of how this a lot of these scenes went for you is it's like you're like running down the court, it's like no one in the way, you're gonna dunk the ball at like 1 second to win the game, then you just fall flat on your face, you know? But it's like, it's not your fault. You don't make the dice roll the way that they do. Like, everything leading up to it was like really good choices from your character and really good role playing, and then the one thing that's not in your control is just like flat on the face. Like, well, it's not your fault. You're doing all the right stuff. It's just the dice hate you.
Yeah. But like you said, it gives you more opportunity to roleplay into a stressful situation and turn it into something that is enjoyable to our lovely listeners.
I thought, to toot my own horn, I thought Idris's death was like chef's kiss.
Yeah, because that was random, right? That was like we just decided to go there.
That wasn't planned. You guys just decided to go there, and I felt like I like did a good job of him being like a little antagonistic with you, because like you and Tanner and him were on the outs still.
Yeah.
But also like being enough where it's like, oh, look, I'm dying, you know, where it's just like, well, we can resurrect you. And it's like, no, I think I'm fine, you know?
Well, I guess, yeah, being the rift of a dead guy would be tiresome after a while.
Yeah.
Well, it's also just like, I think like the whole like running this organization that like people are like arguing about, and just like at a certain point it was like, is this worth, like, you know, like you're not making a difference. I don't know. I felt his scene felt good.
It was kind of the opposite of Mr. Stark, I don't feel so good. It was Tanner, just let me go.
Look, I don't feel good, all right? Stop it. I don't feel good.
Right, and well, like, and I liked the idea of you guys were like, is there anything we can do to save you? And it's like, I think that time has passed.
Mm.
But yeah, I think, and then like, I think I like the stuff with Lucia at the end where you guys were able to convince her and your roles were fantastic. Like, I felt like she felt good. And then I get, let you guys have your punch fest on the Muellers where it's like a little bit of a tenuous fight, but mostly you just get to punch real hard, which is kind of what I wanted the last fight to be. Like, cause the emotional, like, big bad of the series was more Lucia than the Muellers.
Right.
Yeah. Because you saw her.
We had a more emotional connection with her.
Right. So, like, when you guys, like, talk with her about stuff, it's like, well, that was, like, the real, like, the end. And then, like, you had to tie up the loose end of going and punching the Muellers a lot.
Yeah. And we gave her the perfect situation. Like, go underground, just hide. And either way this shakes out, either you keep, like, either we die, you keep your job, or they die and you can
do something else.
Do whatever. Yeah, like, she was, yeah, I mean, yeah, there might be questions for her if we had failed in that last fight. There might be questions for her, like, where were you? But she could talk her way out of that.
Man, had you guys failed those roles in that final fight, though, like, would I have just had to kill you? I don't know. You know, at a certain point, if you all started rolling how Vinny rolled that entire arc, it's like, well, did you just die now?
City of Mist, the tragedy. But it didn't go that way, so we're all still alive.
All right, any last closing thoughts on Naptown before we put this film reel in the can?
Sad to see these characters go, but I'm glad that we get to put a nice little bow on this campaign.
Yes.
I am happy that we actually finished a campaign.
I mean, yeah, and hopefully in like the next month and a half we'll finish a second one.
I mean, yeah. If anyone wants to run a sequel City of Mist campaign with the children of you guys, but that is not for me.
I don't think, you know, and this is like, because, like, I did a City of Mist, right, campaign as well. And, like, it's really difficult because I think the rules are really interesting, but I also think they're at times difficult to podcast for a long-term thing. You know what I mean? It's, like, it's interesting, right, because you do systems and you kind of, like, figure out what you like and what you don't like. And it's kind of fascinating to see what works and what doesn't for a group.
There are parts of City of Mist that I'm like, this is great. I love this so much. And then there's other parts where I'm like, please stop shooting me in the kneecaps, please.
I feel like I just ignored a lot more stuff that I should have. Because, yeah, I know what you mean.
So, quick question. Before we wrap this episode up completely, do we want to give a little brief like snippet into the next campaign?
Ooh,
a little like cliffhanger for
a teaser.
What's happen next? Yeah, a little teaser.
Just one word: France.
Well, I was gonna say pirates.
I don't know. I was trying to give a purpose.
It's not that either. So,
the next campaign we'll be doing is taking place in 7th Sea, which is more rules light because soon we're just going to be doing, like, role-playing scenes with no dice at this rate. But we will be following the tales of 4 bodyguards to a duke who fail immediately as the duke is murdered and they have to protect the heir.
And it's set. ARS, I guess. Can you describe the setting?
15 degrees off Europe with magic.
Yeah, so it's set in the world of Thea, I'm not sure how it's actually pronounced, which is loosely based on, like, 17th century
loosely
Europe.
Loosely is being nice. It's very...
Yeah, loosely is being... Like, it's very heavily inspired by Europe. Like, it's pretty obvious. Like, the character I'll be playing is basically Norse. Like, I mean, her name is even Norse.
I think there's so many things where it's like, hey, so look, we're not this, but we're having, oh, I don't remember what they call the Reformation, but they have a different name for it. And it's like, and it was started by Matthias Lieber. And I'm like, you mean Martin Luther? No, Matthias Lieber. Okay. Okay, game.
Yeah. And like, they're one of the nations in this world. They have a national motto that is just France's national motto. So it's like, I say loosely inspired by Europe, but it's heavily inspired by Europe, but it's like Europe adjacent.
That is our next campaign that I am running. And to figure out what Cody's running next, tune into our after podcast for Outlaws, which will be releasing.
Yeah, I still don't 100% know what the next campaign I'm running is yet, because like it's a mess in my head. And I'm slowly working it out.
Here's another question, though, because I'm not sure when the stuff's coming, but I do have that Avatar RPG stuff coming eventually.
I will play any game that I don't have to run whenever you want.
I feel the same way.
So, like, if we if Cody still doesn't have an idea of what he wants to run, or...
Oh, by the time... Outlaws Wanted is going to go for, like, another 4 months. Like, are you kidding with me? When have I ever been brief? All I want to do is sit and talk to you guys as Lucy. That's going to... I could do that for another 30 hours.
And Camilla.
And Camilla.
Camilla's not on the boat.
Well, she better get herself there so we can talk to her for 30 hours. We got a long trip.
I kind of do want to do, like, and it works better with outlaws because, like, Cody has a canonical character that's part of the crew. Whereas, like, you could just, like, have, like, a debrief of, just, like, them just sitting around talking about, like, what just happened. You know, it's like they have an after-campaign talk.
Yeah, there is a lazy part of me that is somewhat intentional about doing that. Like, I never want to have, like, a true DM NPC that, like, is, like, in the party doing stuff actively, you know? You guys...
Well, I did...
But, yeah, it's nice to have a voice to talk into the world through, you know?
Well, I have that for the next game, so...
How do we want to end this one?
Bye.
Remember, it's the gods that envy us.
Okay, that's also good.
That's what every episode ends with currently.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
And until next time, keep wandering.
Bye.